Download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Coming up at 9, the Chicago improv group, the Katydids, will be here. They are premiering their brand new show on TV Land tonight. It's called Teachers, 10 o'clock. This is a group that was at Chicago, played at I.O. and all over town, and they moved to Los Angeles with a web series. Got represented by William Morris Endeavor, landed a gig with to write a pilot and do a pilot for TV Land, and now they've got an engagement that starts tonight. It's part of the new TV Land lineup, so we'll talk with some of the members of the group coming up here at 9 o'clock. And then I'm very excited about this. 10 o'clock, West Side rapper Saba will be here. He has a brand new track that he is dropping tonight. And I just think it's awesome that WGN 720 AM radio is the Chicago premier destination for the new Saba track. I'm just, you know, he's a 21-year-old rapper. He was just on Chance the Rapper's Angels. He performed on Stephen Colbert. And I just picture like a bunch of 20-year-olds. He just tweeted it out, like trying to find AM radio. They don't just like, I'm not even sure where to go, like what I'm supposed to do. They're just, they're like, just weather all the time. Just keep telling me about the traffic times. So we'll talk to Saba coming up at 10 o'clock. Well, coming up next week is Martin Luther King Day, and that means that the Chicago Sinfonietta will be bringing us their annual MLK concert. It's going to be Sunday in Naperville and Monday night at the Symphony Center on Michigan Avenue. This year, the Sinfonietta will offer up a couple of Chicago premieres, including a piece called The Bass Whisperer, co-written by Grammy Award-winning bassist Victor Wooten. It's also written by Connie Ellisor. Wooten will be also playing in the performance. Victor Wooten is considered one of the best bass players in the world. He was named by Rolling Stone as one of the top 10 bassists of all time. We're not talking like top 10 of now. I'm talking of all time. Wooten has 5 Grammys, and when he's not writing concertos, you can see him performing with Bella Fleck and the Flecktones, Stanley Clark, and many, many more. It's my pleasure to welcome musician, teacher, and artist Victor Wooten to The Download. Victor, thanks for being here.
Well, thank you, Justin. Thanks for having me.
So to talk about the Bass Whisperer, I mean, to be a part of the Sinfonietta here in Chicago, it's a Chicago premiere.
Well, it's a great honor, for one thing. You know, it's not something that an electric bassist or even a double bassist gets to do, to stand up front, you know, of a symphony and do what we do. So what an honor, but it's also so different for me.
Yeah. Why is it? I mean, obviously it's different, but what drove you to write a piece like this?
Well, for the most part, Connie, you know, my partner in crime, she contacted me and asked me if I, you know, wanted to do a concerto. And my first thought was no. I didn't feel like I was ready to dive into it, you know. But then I thought, you know what, why not? This is, the opportunity's here. And so I called her back and said, yeah, let's do it. I said, but I want to make sure that I can help write it. As much of an honor it would be to have it written for me, I want it to be, you know, to be involved.
So. When you were involved in the process of writing that, how different was it for you? Because, you know, as a bass player and you know, jazz music or folk rock, things like that, you know, that's a pretty standard process of how it kind of works, even though you expand it. But how hard was it to change your brain to write in that way?
There's some things that are similar and others that are very different. For one, that's different is you're writing for different instruments. And you're writing expansive. Like, most of the time, like you mentioned, Bela Fleck and the Flecktones. So if I'm writing a song for that, it's banjo, drums, maybe sax or harmonica and bass. So we've got 4 guys, you know. But with the symphony, now we're talking about violins. But then there's a second violin. Now there's violas and cellos and basses, and that's just the strings. Then there might be harp. I mean, you know, and of course all the horns and flutes, there's so much to think about. So there's so many more colors that you have to paint with. So that's way different. It's something I had never done before. Now, as a kid, I played cello in the orchestra, so I've been surrounded by that sound, but to write for it is quite different.
Do you think that background helped you? I mean, obviously, you know, having the understanding of how the symphony works as opposed to being a star bassist who just comes into a symphony surrounding.
It totally helped. There's one thing that's different that most people don't even think about or will never get to experience. Experiencing music from the outside, where you're sitting there listening to it, but from the inside is totally different when you're surrounded by it or even getting to help create it. When you're listening to the music from the inside, it gives you a whole different feeling, different perspective. So having done that, For one, helped me develop my love for this style of music, classical music. But it also gave me a little bit of know-how, a little bit of knowing what's going on, and even knowing the ranges of the instruments. How high or how low can a violin go?
Right.
Versus a cello or a flute, things like that. So, you know, I can't say I was an expert at it at all. That's Connie we're talking about. She's the one that really had that know-how. But the part that's similar is it has to start from creativity.
Right.
You have to be able to hear something. You have to be able to come up with a beautiful melody to expand from. And that's the part that I feel comfortable with. But Connie really has the expertise to say, oh, that would sound better in the French horns.
The Chicago Sinfonietta's concerts, the annual Martin Luther King Day concerts. I mean, it's been going on for a while now. I don't know the number of years, but it's been
nice.
You know, and what's it feel like to be a part of that? I mean, you're going to be at Symphony Center. This is the best that Chicago has to offer, and your piece is going to be on stage.
Yeah. Well, again, what a big honor, and to be honoring such an important man in all of our history, what I still call recent history. To be able to pay tribute to that in this day and age, you know, is amazing. I think our country has come a long way that we can even have a holiday for someone like Martin Luther King. But to be able to be a part of the progression of the country, too, in this celebration, it's an honor. And to be able to do it with something that I love to do, which is music, makes it that much more special for me.
Well, it's going to be Sunday afternoon at 3 in Naperville and then Monday night at Symphony Center on Michigan Avenue. Talking with Victor Wooten, his piece, Bass Whisperer, which he co-wrote with Connie Ellisor, will be on stage as part of the Chicago Symphony at his annual MLK concert and tribute. Let's take a break. When we come back, I'd love to talk to you about your craft, about being a bass player, your work with Bela Fleck and the Flecktones. It's amazing to watch. I mean, if anyone is listening and can multitask, go to YouTube, put in Victor Wooten, and you will be – it's like you're just watching – just artistry in motion. Victor Wooten, one of the best bass players living today. We'll talk with him more about his career after the break. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. I could listen to that forever, man. It's just that jazz bass that my guest tonight is a big part of, and he's taken it to a whole other level. Like I said, go to YouTube, put in Victor Wooten, and you can see him on stage. Victor Wooten, a five-time Grammy Award-winning bassist. He plays bass with several artists, Bela Fleck and the Flecktones, but also Stanley Clarke and Marcus Miller, so many different jazz and folk and rock musicians that are notable. A lot of their music has had Victor Wooten's stamp on it. Victor, you know, there's playing bass, and then there's Victor playing bass. I mean, you take it to a whole nother level. A lot of what you do is, you know, create melodies. I mean, you're a one-man band with that instrument. How did you get into the bass, and how did you move it to another level?
Sure. Well, first, thank you for that first. But I'm the youngest of five brothers that all play music. So when I was born, this sounds like a made-up story, but it's real true. When I was born, my older brothers already knew they needed a bass player.
Literally. True, right?
So I've been playing my
Mom make whole, us a bass player, right?
That's it. Exactly right. Mom and Dad. Yeah. So I've been playing my whole life. Literally, when I was 1, 2 years old, my brothers would sit down to jam, and they would leave a space for me. And I would just make noise with them. But I was learning a whole lot. It's sort of like a baby doing baby talk.
Right.
You know, the baby's in the room. The baby's going to join the conversation. It may not be real words yet, but the communication is real. You know, the parent knows everything the baby's meaning, you know. And so I was learning that. And when I was a little older, and I mean just a little older, 3 or 4, my older brother, Reggie, who's only 8 years older than me, he's my oldest brother. He started really teaching me where to put my fingers.
Wow.
To play songs. But the cool thing is I already knew these songs he was showing me. So learning to play them. Though I always equate it to how a baby learns the words that are necessary for them first. Like when they learn to say milk or more, they already know what that is.
Right.
You know,
so they just need to learn to communicate it.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. With what we call English. They're communicating it anyway, in
right.
their own way. So I was learning now where to place my fingers to play songs, you know, from the late 60s, early 70s that I was already hearing. And so by the time I was five, literally five, the five of us boys, ranging from age 5 to 13, were on tour throughout the West Coast, opening for a great soul singer named Curtis Mayfield.
All right, first off, you're in Chicago. You know, I would hope everybody who's listening right now knows who Curtis Mayfield is.
Yeah,
I had
so.
No idea. I mean, to open up for Curtis Mayfield at five
yeah.
years old.
It was
I've heard
fly.
Stories. That's,
yeah.
that's a story.
It's pretty amazing. You
that's
know,
amazing.
I look back at it now because I have young kids, and I see how amazing it was. But to us at that time, it's just what we did. We played music. You know,
what kind of music were you playing? Was it
soul? Yeah. A lot of the times it was just, you know, Motown was around at that time. It was before pop music was in style of music. Pop just meant popular. So whatever was on the pop radio at the time was everything. You know, of course we had jazz stations and things like that, but the pop stations played everything.
Right.
And we were tuned into that. So it meant some rock. Of course, the Beatles were around, Jackson 5, James Brown, Temptations and things like that. So we were a cover band.
Let me ask you, but I mean, from doing that, especially at such a young age, I mean, you learned so much about being a musician.
Yeah.
Because you had to work. I mean, right. you're working at five. Mm-hmm. But what did you learn about, what did you learn about life, and what made you want to become a
sure.
full-time musician?
Well, it was so just natural that I didn't realize what I was learning. Now, becoming what's called a teacher. You know, I'm fortunate I get to go around and teach now. I look back at what I had learned because I see other people, other musicians who maybe didn't grow up like I did, and they may not have some of the skills. And that's not ego talking. I just realize the differences. It's like someone growing up speaking English as a baby and then someone who's learning as a second language.
Right.
You know, so it was the same type of thing. I was doing it so natural and so young that I didn't think about it. It's just what we did. But there are so many things that you learn on the stage, like you doing radio. You can practice for it, but there's some things you won't learn until you're on the air
right.
and you're doing it and you're making mistakes and you got to file, you got to read something, you can't find the paper. You know, so I know you're smart. Yeah.
You must be a regular listener. That's
But there's so many things that I learn. A lot of music in a band anyway is about how you relate to and communicate with the band members. And then put them in front of an audience. Now you have a whole bunch more people to relate to. And those are things that I learned as a youngster. So I really learned about performance also.
At what point did, you know, we're talking about you on tour at 5 years old. I mean, mm-hmm. you're getting an education that most musicians have never heard of. I mean, to be be on tour with Curtis Mayfield.
Right.
At what point in your life, you know, when you're a little older, maybe you're, you know, in your teens, did you realize that professionally you wanted to evolve and
sure,
and be
sure.
you know a professional musician?
Yeah, I think it was around 8th or 9th grade because three of my older brothers actually went to a few years of college and they dropped out with our parents' blessing. And it was around that time that it dawned on me that I can just play music and that's my job. You know, I had been doing it literally my whole life.
Right.
It was so natural. It was like working on the farm. You don't expect to grow up and be a professional farmer. You know, I didn't think I would be a professional musician. I can literally remember as a kid thinking I was going to be a fireman or a policeman. And that's what kids wanted to be in the 60s
right.
and 70s. So when I was 8th or 9th grade, I said, well, I can really keep doing this? That's when it dawned on me. Wow, I'm going to be a musician for the rest of my life. And there were blessings and curses that came with that.
Well, let's take a break for the news. We come back. I'd love to talk more about those blessings and those curses.
Sure.
And also about the transition from being a traditional bass player, which, you know, has always been rhythm and bass. You know, you guys are in the back and the singers are in the front.
Right.
To a show in which you're in the front,
yeah.
you know, where this is the people are coming to pay tickets to watch you play bass. Yeah. Victor Wooten, 5-time Grammy Award winner, his new work, Bass Whisperer is going to be at the Chicago Sinfonietta on Sunday in Naperville, Monday at the Symphony Center as part of the Chicago Sinfonietta's annual MLK concert. We come back more with Victor Wooten here on The Download. Stay with us. is a download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight at the big table, Victor Wooten, named by Rolling Stone as one of the top 10 bassists of all time.
Wow.
Yeah.
What do they know?
What do they know, right? Victor is bringing his new piece, Bass Whisper, to the Chicago Sinfonietta concert that's going to be honoring Martin Luther King. It's the annual concert that Chicago Sinfonietta does Sunday in Naperville, Monday in Chicago at the Symphony Center. You know, we were just talking about your life and amazing experiences at such a young age to be opening for Curtis Mayfield playing. You know, as you got into adulthood and recognized you're going to be a professional musician, I would just assume that your skills were so advanced, it must have been hard to find musicians to play with.
Well, I grew up playing in a band with my brothers. So at least the first half of my life, we were a five-piece band. And like people know how I learned, which is from my brothers, but how my brother learned, like Reggie, who taught me to play bass, taught Joseph to play keys, who taught him? That's the real, like the real credit gets for, in my head, goes there. So I always had them to play with, and they are some of the best musicians in the world. So playing with them was always my motivation, you know. But for my age, I was maybe a little bit more advanced than other musicians, but I had my brothers to play with.
So when you got older and you know, you started branching out, you know, I said, okay, where would you find musicians? You're not putting an ad in a Craigslist,
right,
and, like,
right. Well,
looking for a band that can match my skills. Oh, by the way, I've been playing since five, opening for Curtis Mayfield. I mean, where do you find the musicians to play?
Yeah,
with?
Well, good question. Through a bad record deal in the early '80s, the five of us brothers found ourselves not playing together steadily anymore. Couple of the brothers were in New York. The rest of us were in Virginia, where we were living. And so to not have to get a regular job, a few of us started working at an amusement park, Busch Gardens, in Williamsburg, Virginia. And so we got in some of the musical acts. I was actually hired there as a bluegrass fiddle player. And I literally, my brother Roy got me the job. I had never played bluegrass fiddle. I had never played fiddle in my life. But I had seen a violin in my, you know, high school orchestra. So I borrowed one and just started practicing. And I started playing fiddle at this park, and I realized I had to learn how to play with other musicians. I had been playing with only my brothers. And now I'm sort of like in another musical household where people react different. Good musicians, but, you know, you have to relate to them.
Right.
And things were different. And I realized that through that bad experience record label thing that really pulled the brothers' band apart, the good part is it made me a better musician because now I learned how to play with other people. And that was kind of the start. And it was through that bluegrass band at the amusement park that I found out about this banjo player living in Nashville. And that's how I met Bela Fleck, and one thing led to the other.
So you know, obviously Bela Fleck and the Flecktones has just been an amazing band that has stood the test of time, won a ton of Grammys.
Yeah.
What's your process like with that band? I mean, you collaborate, you continue to work, but what was the process like when you met him and started working with the band?
Yeah, well, I visited a friend in Nashville, Tennessee, who knew Bela. He introduced us, and I went to Bela's house, and we just had a jam session, just him and me in his kitchen. And we just musically hit it off. And personally hit it off. And then soon after, he asked me to be a part of a television show. And he was looking for a drummer, and I told him about my brother. And then Howard Levy, great harmonica player,
yeah, of
keyboard
course.
Player. So we got together with the hopes of doing one show, the plan of doing one show. But it went so well. I mean, we barely got a chance to rehearse, and the show was amazing. We knew it was something special. It was a new sound. So we kept doing it. You know, and 20-something, close to 30 years later, we're still doing
it. Well, you guys show up all the time. I mean, I just had someone text in and said, I can't believe you have Victor on. I just saw him at Ravinia.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you obviously have a huge fan base for the band, but it's not all you do. I mean, because, doing work with Stanley Clark, I mean, you have found a way to not only be a part of such a, I would say, a progressive band and Bela Fleck band, but to take bass playing from the back line to the front line.
Well, I'm very fortunate. For one, having the upbringing that my brothers gave me musically, I was able to see music and my instrument differently. You know, the bass is not limited. The musician is limited or not. And so when I would see my brother playing guitar, I would want to make my bass do that. I was learning drum licks from my brother, but playing them on the bass. I would literally give my brother Joseph the bass and say, play this like a piano. And he would lay it down, and I would see two hands on it. I said, wow, we can put two hands on the neck. Then I realized that you take a saxophone, and if you were to lay it sideways, it looks just like you're playing a guitar. And so fortunately, as a youngster, I was able to see that. So I stole or borrowed, you could say, from my brothers way early. And so I was playing and experimenting with different things early on.
Well, you said it. I mean, the instrument's not limited. The artist is
right,
But in your case, I mean, it's so interesting because the bass. Talk about the craft. You know, it does serve as sort of the rhythm section.
Right. There's a lot of great.
It still needs to do that. Right. You found a way to expand that to add melody to really push the boundaries of what that instrument can do.
Yeah, but I had good examples first. I had good shoulders to stand on. You mentioned Stanley Clarke, Marcus Miller. These guys came before me.
Yeah.
So I grew up listening to them, and then of course Jaco Pastorius. But even going further back. You know, the bass players that played with people like Curtis Mayfield or any of those guys. So you have James Jamerson, Chuck Rennie, Bob Babbitt, Duck Dunn. These great guys that really created, for me, the fabric of the whole soundtrack to my upbringing were these players. When I was young, I didn't know their names, but I learned them all as I got older. The song you played as we were coming in is a song called The Bass Tribute, and that was a song I wrote to pay tribute to all of these heroes. Even the people I didn't even know their names, a lot of times we get tributed after we die. And I wanted to say thank you while a lot of my heroes were still alive. And so I did a song like that. And I'm saying that to say there's a lot of shoulders that I'm standing on. Mm-hmm. So I haven't done it myself, on my own.
Well, you know, we mentioned earlier in the interview about you playing cello when you were younger in symphony, and it gave you a better understanding of how the symphony works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting because when we talk about bass, there's stand-up bass, there's the electric bass.
Mm-hmm.
You see a lot of the stand-up bass stuff in jazz music. I mean, obviously the classic and even contemporary, that seems to be but your music and others have taken the electric bass and adapted it to contemporary jazz music and given it a whole new sound. Do you prefer it's such a strange question, but genre-wise, do you consider yourself a jazz artist?
Well, if I had to choose one, I'm really like an R&B soul music bass player that fakes his way through jazz and is really faking his way through this classical stuff now, right? But because the fabric of my upbringing came through Motown and James Brown and Sly Stone and that kind of stuff. The 60s, late 60s and 70s, when we had access to lots of different styles of music. So that's really how I consider myself. But I love playing jazz. I love the freedom of jazz to improvise the same way we're talking right now.
Well, it seems because when you see your stuff or listen to your stuff, I mean, there does that spirit comes out, that improvisation, that freedom, that you're using a lot of what jazz music has pushed forward for so long.
Right.
You're using that. That's your influence.
Right, and to play that music, you have to have a certain level of understanding of your instrument, yourself, and the music, which is why a lot of the times, and classical the same way, which is why if you play your instrument long enough, you're going to find yourself dabbling in jazz and classical because of the high level that it takes to live in that world. And so I'm very, very fortunate that I get to dabble in a lot of different things, you know. And mentioning the cello, I've been an electric bass player. Our notes are usually rhythmic and short, but I've always had a longing for that long note, the bowed note. And so what I'll be playing with the symphony is a brand new instrument that I call the bow bass. I've had an idea for literally 20 years that I got made just a year ago for this piece, the Bass Whisperer. And it's an electric bass that I hold like an electric bass, but I can bow it to make it sound like a cello or a bass.
That's look where you're at. You're making new instruments. You're past the music now. You're like, the music's old hat. Now you need to start making new instruments.
When you hear it, you have to find a way to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, if you stick with the sound enough, you'll find a way to do it.
Let me ask you, you've made a transition to being a teacher.
Sure.
And, you know, you've talked a lot about your brothers and how your brothers have had taught you. And a lot of it was like, put your hand here and put your hand there.
Right.
You know, people, who, kids who might be listening to you right now or, you know, bass players who want to expand their craft. As a teacher, what do you tell people who say, I want to be a bass player?
Right. Well, I go back to what my mom says, and I say this to all the musicians. My mom would tell us boys, she would ask us a question. She would say, what does the world need with just another good musician? Because we were spending hours practicing. And she was making us look at why. She said, what does the world need with just another good musician? She said, we have plenty. She said, what the world needs is good people. So it really made us to look at and find a way to make all this time spent doing something make us better people so that the world is better. And that sounds like a parent or a mom talking, but it's accurate. You know, so I really look at that and try to get younger students to look at that, because your ability on the instrument may open a door, but who you are as that person is either going to keep you, that door open or get you thrown out of the room, because it is about relationships. If we're on tour, we get to play music a couple hours a day, but we're riding on a plane or a tour bus or hanging out the rest of the day, and who we are as people is really the important thing. Who you are off of the instrument is more important than who you are on the instrument.
Victor Wooten, pleasure, man. Just
Thank
a
you.
Pleasure to talk to you.
I appreciate it, Justin.
A Thank long you. Time, just, I mean, as we said, Rolling Stone, because you're one of the best bass players of all time, 5-time Grammy Award winner, plays with Bela Fleck and the Flecktones, but also Stanley Clark, his own music, Marcus Miller, all the way down the line of all the great bass players. And now I know when he was 5 years old, opened for Curtis Mayfield. Amazing to talk to you. The show, the Chicago Sinfonietta show, which is the annual show, the Martin Luther King Day show,
right.
Is going to be Sunday in Naperville, and then in Monday it's going to be at the Symphony Center here in Chicago.
Cool.
And your piece, Bass Whisperer, is the Chicago premiere.
Yeah.
Will be a part of that show. Victor, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for speaking with me, Jess.